Hi, I am probation officer Kylie Shepherd. I am an adult probation officer with the County of Santa Clara. At the time I was supervising Mr. Jorge, I was supervising a high-risk intensive supervision caseload where we dealt strictly with AB 109, which is post-release community supervision and mandatory supervision. As some people may not know, in 2008, the state under Assembly Bill 109 diverted some people being released from prison back to the counties for supervision. So some people went to state parole while others went to county supervision, and Mr. Jaime was one of those people that got diverted to post-release community supervision, and he ended up on my caseload in 2018. And to be honest, in reading his jacket, he did not stand out in any manner. He was very typical of the people I'd been supervising for the past 10 years. A lot of criminal history, gang involvement, weapons charges, in and out of the system, very minimal employment history, just all the high risk factors, they were all present there. And I hope the best for him, but the outlook, unfortunately, I didn't see anything at that point that he would be successful, unfortunately, because as soon as he got out, he started dodging me, which is not unusual. He had, I believe, a wife at the time that you weren't getting along with. Trying to go back and forth between Stockton and Santa Clara County, avoiding programming, avoiding really getting engaged in treatment. I did a lot of trying to track down Mr. Jaime in various locations around the city by phone. Wasn't very good about reporting, which resulted in, unfortunately, in some violations, some appearances before the court, flash incarcerations where he spent a small amount of time in custody without having to go to court, which was one of the consequences or sanctions of post-release community supervision. So at that time, he did not stand out a lot to me. Like I said, we tried to get him engaged in treatment, get him on a regular reporting schedule, tried to build a rapport with him, but I do believe he was resistant and didn't have even a good outlook for himself and didn't expect much of himself. I think I expected more of him than he did at the time. Would you agree?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I agree. My name's Jorge Adrian Jaime. I go by Adrian. I'm currently a case manager at Life Moves, where we service the vulnerable population, criminal justice, mental health. I am also a co-owner of a sober living home called the Dream House INC. And I am a part-time carpenter on the weekends. I have been doing this thing called the system since 2002, probably back to juvenile days, but since 2002, I can remember being in and out of the systems like my entire adult life. I never knew about Santa Clara County until my last prison commitment. When I was released in 2018, I heard about this new grant, AB 109, and I, because of my past history, maybe codependency, I married someone who was, I want to say, was like a stranger in a sense. I won't discredit her, you know, she was the cause of me transferring from one county to another. So to basically, if you're in a county and you want to get transferred to a different county, the only way to do so is to get married. And I got married to this woman and came out here to this county. And so in 2018, I met Mrs. Kylie Shepherd here in Santa Clara County. I believe the fifth day I was here, I separated with my wife and I became unhoused. I didn't want to engage in treatment services, engage in shelter services. I knew nothing, well, very minimal about employment. I've only, at that time, I think I was 35 years old. I've never had a job, only one time, like a real job, when I got out from my first prison commitment. And they made me get a job as part of my conditions. And as soon as I discharged on that term, I quit my job. And then, you know, started doing the same thing as I was doing before. I won't say what it was, but it resulted in me going back to prison for a few years. And yeah, I ended up out here. Met Mr. Shepherd, did some violations. I remember a time when she would come here, when she would call me and tell me to check in, and I was still living in Stockton. And then I would like try to like dodge the system, like, okay, I'm gonna come over on Thursday, you know, go to a meeting and then check in the next day and then, you know, dodge back to my hometown. Because I was afraid, you know. We as men are scared to say like, oh, I'm afraid. No, I was afraid of change. I was, you know, I didn't say it then because, you know, the behavior and the mind state was different, I guess you want to say. I was still stuck in a certain mind frame where the growth had stopped growing. Once, you know, since 2002, your mind stops growing. Well, for me it was. And I just didn't want to do nothing but just go back home. And I remember a time when like this driving back and forth to this county, to that county to check in was such a big issue for me, and to do these programs that she wanted me to do, that I remember after a few violations, and keep in mind, whenever I would violate, like I would straight out scound. Out scound means I would go on the run from the day of release, because you know, part of my obligations were to check in when I get out from custody, and I would just leave the county because I had nowhere to go. And so,
but you try and revert back to Stockton, which at that time was your comfort area, but it was also your point of, or area where you got in a lot of trouble, committed crimes, probably had a peer group that was not positive, i.e. gang affiliation.
Yeah. A lot of things.
And I think that's typical of offenders, or people that are in and out of custody. They want to, you know, go back to an area that they're comfortable with, that they know. And that's what I think was also, you were so afraid of, is here in Santa Clara County. It's an unknown area. It's a larger area. You don't have a support network here any longer because your family's in, you know, San Joaquin or Stockton. But at the same time, I'm talking to his mother. And even his mom didn't want him back in Stockton. She wanted him to be healthy, happy, and productive and out of the system. And while she was always supportive and would allow you to stay there, she didn't actually want you in Stockton. So, and I don't want to put your, you know, all of everything out there, but, you know, there were some substance abuse issues that we were dealing with at the same time, which is always a motivating factor for one's negative behavior. But how many times did I tell you to come to the reentry center?
Oh yeah, she kept saying that. And I, matter of fact, I came here the first time to transfer my supervision, and I met the gentleman right here. I don't know how it is, but when you walk in, you go right. And I met with him, and I told him the situation, like I'm fighting with my wife. I don't think it's gonna work out. He's like, "What do you want to do?" So I just, you know, just okay. I'm just gonna sign because, you know, I wasn't educated on what to do. And so the next day I called him and said, "Hey, I broke up with my wife." He said, "Your paperwork's already in motion. Someone's gonna reach out to you." And this lovely lady right here in front of me, Mrs. Shepherd, reached out to me. But yeah, I remember another time when I came to check in, and I was like fully ready. You know when you're a kid and like you're ready to go camping, you got all your camping gear, and like I was fully ready. Like I was like jail turn in ready. I came with no wallet. I came with like just my money, like no ID, like no phone, like parked my car at the corner. I said, if I'm not out in 1 hour, you know, kind of like a bank robbery, leave, you know? And I came, checked in. I told Shepherd, hey, you know, I'm not gonna curse, but I said some foul things. I said, hey, I wanna do your program. Go ahead and, you know, lock me up. And when you're done, just transfer me back home so I can live my life and do what I do. And I think she had said something about like going back and like your history, what you're comfortable of. Like that's what I was comfortable about, because she would threaten me with time. And I'm like, you can't threaten me with time. I'm comfortable there, yeah. You know?
Because doing jail time is easy.
Yeah.
It's very easy. Living in our community and participating in programming and addressing some of the criminogenic needs, which criminogenic needs being what causes you to commit crimes, causes the recidivism, your return to jail and or prison. Working on those, which, you know, is hard work. You're addressing traumas in your past or behavior that you're not proud of, and addressing those and working on those. It's not easy. And it's not unusual for, you know, people to resist that as long as they can. But when you said, I want to go back to jail, I think probably something clicked for me as well. Like, this is not going to be advantageous for you. It's just going to be a continual cycle. Of course you want to go back to jail. It's easy. Your meals are provided to you. You know what happens in politics in custody and prisons. You'll fall right back into that. That's not hard. It'll just be easy time. I want it, and I told you no. And what did I tell you? I'm not going to let you take the easy route. If you really want to make a change, you're going to have to take the hard road. And the hard road is staying in the community, getting engaged in treatment. You don't have to do it by yourself. Remember, right? You know, I told you, not by yourself. You just have to trust other people. And I let him walk out the door.
She did too. I remember. So then, like, but again, like, I walked out the door and I went back home, you know, or at the time was home. And I think everyone in the car was like, "What happened?" I was like, "Oh man, she wasn't trying to lock me up. I'm gone. She's going to find me." And then again, you know, that cycle of like, you know, not reporting, not checking in, and then I get a warrant off my arrest. And then I think I hit a roadblock in my life where the substance abuse and the mental health kicked in. And there was a point in time where, like, it got hard, right? Because, you know, doing all this time, like, you lose relationships, people die, people move away. And then, you know, you're on parole, you're on the run, no one wants you there. I think I got my mom's house raided a few times, like multiple times, like growing up, like where, like, they came and raided the house and, you know, got everybody out by gunpoint. And she's an old lady now, so she's like, I can't do this no more. You can't be here. And I think I went to everyone's door that day and I asked for help, right? And this time I kind of like, you know, I kind of really wanted some help this time, because I was like, you know, maybe I should try this thing called life, kind of getting tired, kind of getting older. Nobody wanted to help me. I went to my mom's, my sister's, like everyone, like shut the doors, you know, people who I thought were friends. I was like, no, we can't help you. And so then, I tried to commit suicide that day. I went in a high-speed chase, and, I actually went over, like, I tried to go the painless way out, where, like, I pulled over side of the freeway. I was like, ooh, it's going to hurt if I jump. You know, then what if I survive? It's going to be all bad. I was like, ah. So, yeah, long story short, I went on a high-speed chase, tried to kill myself. I got beat up by the Alameda PD. Ended up at John George Hospital. They released me from the hospital. And then I turned myself in to do a flash, and they kicked me out 10 days later. I was mad about it. But then again, you know, I got out and I went back on the run. January 7th, Mr. Shepherd called my dad's phone, and I was there, and they're trying to find some type of alternative for me in Stockton. But there's not a lot of, at the time, I don't know now, but at the time there was no resources, no help. I didn't know what to do, and I actually wanted some help this time, and I went to some place where it was like a sober living home, and I was like, yeah, I'm not gonna come here. I immediately identified the fit wasn't there for me, and I said maybe I should try this thing, you know, called life. And she just happened to call, like, and then said, I'm gonna transfer your paperwork, you're gonna go back to Stockton, and that county can deal with you there. And I was like, no, stop, I'll be there tomorrow. And so she gave me some instructions, and she said, check in at Salvation Army, and we'll meet there, and then you follow my instructions. And I did it ever since, and since then I have not found a desire to put nothing in my body to change the way I feel. I have not been involved in the criminal justice system, not even a parking ticket. However, with some clean time, I remember, like, because, you know, the past catches up to you. So I'm in Santa Clara County doing well, doing everything that she tells me to do. Mm-hmm. Edith Martinez is a big support. I checked in with her almost like 3 times a week, and I just like listened, and I was like quiet, because I, you know, we talk a lot, and I just took the suggestions, and, you know, she kept telling me, go to reentry and do this and go do that and go do that. And then I'm doing outpatient, and while I'm doing outpatient, I'm speaking and I'm telling my story, and they're like, you should go to school. And I didn't even know how to do that. You know, I got my degree incarcerated, so everything was done, always done for me. So, you know, but luckily here, you know, they're a big fan of holding your hand around here, right? So Edith held my hand, and she, you know, did all the necessary paperwork for me, and she said, just show up. And been to school ever since, pursuing my communications and behavioral science degree. And it's been a journey.
Let's talk about some of the programs that you benefited from. Because when you did call me, I mean, we'd been playing this game of hide and seek for a year and a half at this point. And I gave him some very clear instructions to come back to Santa Clara County, check in at Salvation Army, which is a residential program which offers long-term substance abuse treatment, as well as a working program. Which I thought would be advantageous or good for him. Keep him busy, because he does need to keep busy. He's not a kind of a sit back and watch kind of guy. So I wasn't sure even a 30-day program would be enough for him. So when he did call me from Amaya's house, which is their shelter before they go into the residential program, in order to provide a clean test, and show your commitment to entering the program. He was there, and my partner and I at the time made contact with him. And what did I ask you? I said, if you really want help, I will make a phone call.
She did.
Off the books, and I will get you a bed that's outside of a shelter. Because I just wasn't sure a shelter, he was gonna stay there. I just wasn't convinced of it. But if he would trust me on that, and at least try it and go through the interview, we would make that call for him, and we got you in touch with John. That was the first start, Home of the Loving Fathers. And kind of from there, it was building blocks.
Yeah.
Building blocks. We went from, I mean, we had work programs at the Goodwill, your truck driver. Another SLE led to construction. You did CEO for a little while, right?
Yes, I did.
So I would say, talk about some of the programs you've, because I think you've done probably almost every program that the Reentry Center probably has to offer or provide to you. Abode, you went through Abode.
I did everything.
So talk about some of those programs and how beneficial they were.
So yeah, the program that she sent me to for the sober living home, it was a faith-based program. It wasn't my faith, so it didn't work out for me. I was trying to find my niche, and I needed more recovery base. And so I came here, and again, like, no money. I'm working at Goodwill. I just like have a half a paycheck. And Edith Martinez, I don't know what she did, but she made something happen. I signed some papers, and the Reentry Center sent me to a sober living home. So I was not on the street, because we know what happens when I'm on the street. And they sent me a referral for work. I'm employed now, I got a job. I ended up using the resources, right, where I don't have to be on the streets, and then I'm able to pay my own way, and which I did. I after that little jump start, I paid my own way, and then we talked about like the school, like that was like the biggest thing for me. Like is the peer mentor class that they have here.
You went through KDAC too, right? Here through here.
It was but I didn't. Okay. But I switched careers from it was the KDAC class, but it was the peer mentor certification class, but that was like a starting point. I just signed up for classes last night, matter of fact, too. It was a starting point to, like, you know, open my eyes that this is something different. I did the Conexión thing too, where like I was unemployed. Well, I got laid off at Goodwill, so then I went to a day labor center. The first day, nothing showed up, and I think you checked in with me after that. The second day, I go to work. I meet a gentleman. And he starts me off as just a helper, and I'm still with that guy. Whenever I'm not doing nothing, I go work with him. I've been with him for years.
And that was a connection you made through
that was the connection I made through the connection.
The day labor program.
And that was just a day labor. Then I became a carpenter through some time. And that the pay that they gave me there is like way more than, I won't get into details, but it's beneficial and it still helps me to this day.
And talk about your work here at the Reentry Center, which is amazing. Oh, yeah. Because then you eventually get hired as a peer mentor.
So I went through the peer mentorship program. They offered an internship program. I did it here. Pandemic came. Unfortunately, people lost their lives, got sick, and were deployed. So there was like a ghost town around here. So they asked for unclassified community workers, and I applied and I got the job. Was here about a year, and just in the back end, seeing how everything plays out. And again, I accessed all the resources at one time, so I kind of was like a fit, because I was not only just a client, but then I worked here, and so I can relate to the clients, identify the needs, and help them out to the best of my needs. And
the best of their needs.
I apologize, because it's not about me right now, right? Something else came up to where doors opened and closed, and then a door opened to where it allowed me to start my own business.
What about Pathways? You went to Pathways?
I went to Pathways too, through here. I met with
Shelter, right?
And the shelter. All these resources, connections.
Each one was a stepping stone, and I've always commended him for.
I think the first one was
always moving towards your goal.
Yeah.
And making sure your next step is something that's going to get you closer to your goal. Even if your goal is changing constantly, which it does
him. It does.
Which is okay.
Yeah.
But he never left one job or one resource without starting another one that was going to just get him one step closer. And I think that's part of what a lot of people kind of stumble on, especially when it comes to unemployment and the hurdles, our people have because of their felony backgrounds. They get really discouraged. And I know you got discouraged at some points as well. But not taking advantage of resources fully that are offered to them, making those connections which you made, always leaving a job on good terms, not just up and quitting, but also understanding, and they understanding, that you're moving towards a goal, and at right time that job was good for you, and now it's time for you to kind of take that next step and go towards another goal, which I've always commended you for, because I think it's always a good thing to never leave an employer without them being a resource to you, or a reference. Thank you. A reference. And some people, they just think, oh, I'm going to make, 50 cents more at this job. So they just quit right off the bat, and they're off to the next 50 cent raise, which is not always a good way to keep your job history positive and keep growing and advancing.
Another thing that I learned that someone told me was, if you do something you like, right, and it pays your bills, you're not getting rich, but you like have this peace of mind, and then you're rich, right, in other ways. And so like for me, like dealing with the whole I'm not ashamed to say it no more, I try to kill myself, let's be real, right? And I think you found out later on the line, and now that I'm able to like help people, and I don't do nothing perfect, I'm not this big angel, I make mistakes every day. I made a mistake this morning, but I just don't make the same mistake again tomorrow morning. I'm able to help people today. All right, I'm able to be of service to my community.
What about let's talk about your kids and re-involving yourself in their life, and actually being a role model for them? There's never too late to reestablish those bonds.
So let's talk about how, if you look at Mrs. Shepherd's phone, I know you're on the camera, I mean, you can't see us, but if you look at my contact, I send her pictures all the time. I've been sending her pictures for years already, since I, even after I discharged. because I'm just happy to like be alive. You know what I mean? I'm happy to like have this life. I came here with nothing, didn't have a job, only one job in my life, right? Didn't have no goals, no plans, didn't even know what a plan was. And like do some hard work, like I'm a business owner, right? I have a good job that offers me benefits, pays me well. And then I have a side gig that I still keep connections with. You know, I have my own apartment today. I've never had my own place. I've maintained my place for years, right? I have custody of my daughter. She lives with me right now. She's at home right now. I just enrolled her in school, right? I'm doing the single daddy thing. Like, you know, like the mom's absent. We'll leave it at that. And
that's probably harder than any prison term you did, I bet, right?
Oh, yeah. She's, you know, she's going through all these woman emotions. We know what those, I don't know what those are, but.
Just being a involved,
yeah,
present parent is difficult.
Yeah.
But it's the most rewarding job you're ever going to have.
Yeah. And then I think my mom even told me that, too. And
but that's something you didn't have with your children back in
2018. No. I wanted to go back to prison.
They were, if I remember correctly, they were staying with family. I think mom was even incarcerated at some point, correct?
Mom was in prison too.
Right, prison too. So being taken care of by family members.
Yeah, sure know how to pick
I mean,
them.
It is what it is back then, but I mean, now I would say you're the role model, a role model for them, obviously, and being an evolved present parent. How does that?
No, give me kudos. I appreciate everything, but yeah, I like sometimes I give her the same kudos. Like even my mom one time, she sent her a picture. I think I had just celebrated a milestone, a recovery. I would say just a recovery milestone, where like we have this amount of like clean time. We don't put nothing in our body. We don't use drugs. We don't, you know. And I celebrated a milestone, and my mom was super happy. And then she brought up Mr. Shepherd, and then so she wrote on a piece of paper, "Thank you for helping my son." Held it, you know, I had to do it at the airport signs, and took a picture, and we sent it to Kylie Shepherd. Mm-hmm. You know, because we're grateful. And I stay texting her. I think I sent her pictures last week. I was at a little convention.
I think you sent me pictures yesterday.
Yeah, I did yesterday, last night. I went somewhere, took pictures. I sent it to her. Even if she don't respond, right, it's just the point that, you know, just to say I'm just grateful for, you know, that guidance, because, like, I knew what the outcome is. Like, you know, I don't foresee the future. I'm not a fortune teller, but I know that if I do this, I'm gonna go here. But I'm comfortable going here. But I'm gonna do this as long as I can until I get caught. Right. So I would probably still be in that same mind state, because it took some hard work to like be away from everyone, right? Be out here alone. But then like when she's I don't know. It's like a different probation. Like it was different. It was a different agent. It wasn't like she was like my supervisor, probation, parole person. It was more she was just like here to help. And when she would show up to report, I didn't get that vibe. Like, oh, you know, people had this, that stigma where like you gotta hide something or you gotta do this and do that. I was always like with her, I was able to just be myself, right? And admit my mistakes. Like, did you go here? Nah, I didn't. Okay. But one thing I did do is I didn't do drugs today and or tomorrow or last year or so. She was my helping hand.
I think once that you let your guard down and accepted the fact that people actually are available to and resources to help you, that it was like he was like a horse out of the gate at that point. And I don't think he ever looked back. Not to say, and we've sped this up a lot. We played this game for almost 3 years before he discharged successfully in 2020, so almost over 2 years now. So he's been clean, sober, doing everything that he needs to do. And like you said, keeping in contact, which I always appreciate, because we don't always have a lot of success stories in our career. But definitely Jorge is at the top of the list, number one. And I'm not sure I'll ever have another one like him.
I won't let her. I won't let her. I'll wrap it up with that, man. I appreciate reentry, right? The AB 109 committee for bringing Mr. Shepherd into my life, right? Because we as humans, like, we're important. Like, I'm important today, you know? Like, and I get to help people. I ain't no perfect, You know, as much as she wants to make it sound like, yeah, I take the credit, right? But I don't do it alone. Like, still, I don't do it alone, you know? I wake up in the morning, you know, I don't do it alone. I ask for help, and I, you know, continue to ask for help because it's easy, you know? But then you help other people, and that's what makes it rewarding.